I get to share with you today my most non-favorite topic. something that I discovered that I don't have about 23 years ago. And so I want to tell you today about this amazing aspect of love that is probably one of the primary things that defines what love actually looks like in our lives, but that's not always present in my life and may, surprisingly enough, not always be present in yours. In 1 Corinthians 13 and 4, it says this: love is patient. Love is patient. It's like me being on the phone with my good friend the other week and trying to work through this ACC claim and trying to explain things to him. Getting pretty frustrated because it's about the 10th time that I'm on the phone explaining to him. I mean, reality is that English is a second language and there's some difficulties around understanding the system and the process, but you're just having to tell him again and again the same thing. And as I'm telling him, it's the same information and it just makes sense. And I'm telling him again, and then there's this voice that I hear. It's kind of like, it's more than the voice of reason. It's more like the relational voice, you know? It's actually the voice of Lorraine, who has noticed that my tone on the phone has changed, you know, to a point of frustration. And then this voice of reason and voice of relationship says to me in the distance, he just wants you to hear him and just to tell him that, yes, you will ask the question that he wants you to ask. Oh, okay, I hear what you're saying, and yeah, I will ask them that question when I get the chance, you know? And it's like, oh, you know, love is patient. Love is patient. It's like my neighbours are having another party, and it's the end of semester, which means that every time it's the end of semester, there's a party. And it's loud, and it's just right, and our bedroom is like right here, and there's a driveway and the fence, and then there's their living room, and then there's just noise, and it's 1 a.m. and the party's still cranking, and I'm cranky, and I'm just trying to like, it's okay, and then you got to take all the measures, right? So the measures include that, it's party night. Let's relocate the bedroom to the lounge on the other side of the house and sleep on a mattress on the floor, which we did. Or it's finally, like next time round, it's appear at their front door in my pajamas going, what's going on? And then I, genius of me, you know, good passive response, mow the lawns the next morning real early. So I'm out mowing the lawns. And I turn the mower off to empty the catcher, and I hear a noise. And I wander over and I look over the fence, and they're out on the back patio as early as I'm mowing the lawns, having another one, and just turn the stereo on. I'm like, oh. Love is patient, isn't it? It's like my son comes to me, oh, Dad, I've sold the car. And I've got to buy another one. It's this one over here. I can pick it up today. Can you ring the insurance? And you need to cancel that insurance on that car and get a new one on that one there. And I'm just going, but I only set that insurance up beginning of the week on that car. And this is about the fifth time in the last 5 or 6 weeks that I'm so embarrassed ringing up the insurer again to go, yeah, another car. Yeah, I know. We've just, yeah, can you change? I'm over that. Time my son grew up and got his own insurance broker and his own, you know, like, isn't it time? Yes, it's time. I agree. But love is patient. It's really interesting that into that second story, the party scene story, those other two stories are pretty recent, but that party scene story, that's an old story. That's 23 plus years old story. The reason it sits with me is that during that season of not just party neighbours, but other things going on in my life, a lot of changes going on, becoming a dad, that was one of the ones in the life. Stepping into church ministry was another one. A whole lot of things were changing in my world. And I had this real desire to be a person who loved others. I wanted to love Lorraine. I wanted to love the kids that we were going to be traveling around New Zealand ministering to in schools and camps. I wanted to love my neighbour. It was really easy to love one of the neighbours because they were sort of like our age and like us and the same as us. But these younger student types, they were different from us. But I wanted to love them. And it was into that that I discovered 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4, which is kind of bizarre because I'd read it, you know, before and I'd heard the poem that Paul writes, but I never heard it. And I can remember sitting, reading 1 Corinthians 13, 4, and going, love is patient. Oh. And it just been, for the first time, just this simple but very real realization that my love was not like that. And you know how you get cool verses for the year? You know, like a verse like, be strong and courageous, for the Lord is with you. That could be your verse for the year. Or, I will never leave you or forsake you. That'd be a great verse for the year, you know? Nothing can separate you from my love. Great verse for the year. My verse for the year became love is patient. It was like, it was not a cool, it wasn't like I was looking for a verse for the year. It just became obvious that God wanted me to know that year. And it was, rather than being this nice, furry feeling, it was more like having like a prickle in your foot and your tweezers and needle and you just can't find it and get it out and it's just there all the time. Love is patient. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is that love is patient. But just before we go there, we find that sentence in 1 Corinthians 13, which is kind of like this poem about love. And it's interesting that this next few weeks, we're going to be talking about how can we love our world, the people near and far, how can we love them with that 1 Corinthians 13 kind of love? And it's an interesting place to go there when you're thinking about loving the world. Because if you were thinking about like loving one another, it would be an obvious place to go. Because Paul is writing to a church to start with. And he's writing to a church who are not very good at loving one another. And he's starting to point out some of the tensions that they have as a church and some of the relational breakdown. And then he's bringing to them one of the things that he's saying that will help them is to understand that they each have gifts from God and the gifts are given to each other to serve each other. So he's talking about spiritual gifts and the need to use the gifts for the sake of others, not for yourself, not for your own gain, but for the benefit of others. And it's into the middle of that that he then says, I want to show you a most excellent way, the way of love. And so it's almost as if he pauses going, you guys are not very good at loving each other. You need to stop thinking about yourself and think about others and serve each other. And I just want to push pause and say that serving each other is actually about the most excellent way, love. And here's what love looks like. And here's what's interesting is that when we come to this idea of love, is that sometimes, and we talked a little bit about this last year, but sometimes with love, I think that we think about the different spaces within which we are to love. And so if you're thinking about 1 Corinthians space and Paul writing to the church, you could almost go that, let's just call it the CBC, you know, space or CBC circle. Paul could be writing to us saying, hey, you know, you guys as a church, you need to learn how to love one another. That's really important. And then we might go to another passage, you know, like for example, in Matthew 5, where Jesus is talking about don't just love your neighbours, but love your enemies. We might have another category out here, and it might be like our enemies. And there's a specific, you know, passage that talks about what it looks like to love our enemies. You might, my neighbours, by the way, who had the loud music, they weren't my enemies, were they? They were just my neighbours. Sometimes neighbours can feel like enemies. But they were my neighbours. And then there's like my friend who I'm trying to help on the phone. And he doesn't fit into here. He sort of fits into this category. I guess he is like a neighbour. He's not an enemy. But we have these spaces. And sometimes when we're going through God's Word, the Bible, we can find that it speaks specifically to a space, right? But most times when we look at this idea of love, living a life of love, we actually find that it's the same into all the spaces. It really is. It's not as if it's a different kind of love for the church and a different kind of love for the enemies and a different kind of love for a friend. Because here's what's important to note, is that the love that it's talking about is the love that finds its source in God. It's love that's sourced in Him first. You know, God is love. Love is patient. Therefore, it makes sense that God is patient with me. And in this way, He's expressing His love to me. So that's actually the same wherever I find myself. And this is where last year we talked about this idea that what would it be like to think instead of how do I love one another and how do I love my neighbor, but more to think how do I have an ever-expanding circle of God's love? What does it look like that having found that God loves me and that I start to understand what it means to live a life of love to Him and be yes to Him, that I find as I'm yes to God, one of the first things He calls me to is to live a life of love and to love others, and whichever circle I find myself in, I just find that it's a widening circle. This helps me understand this, that it's not like I think like, oh, I'm catching up with Liam and therefore I have this special connection with him because we're brothers in the family of God. And then I meet up with my mate who's having trouble with his ACC claim and I become the community worker who's working with the migrant in the country, helping him with his issue, and I'm loving him in a different way. I don't see it like that because he's my brother too. But even if he doesn't fit into this circle right now, it doesn't matter because he fits into this circle. And here's a little bit of, if you want to know, do I have any, like, I guess, biblical grounds for that? Here's one that I would look at. Matthew 22. We'll just chuck the verse up there, thanks. So, remember, we talked about this a few weeks ago, that, and it was from the Mark passage, but that when Jesus had all these people coming asking Him questions the week before He died, and they were trying to trick Him and trap Him and asking Him about taxes and about marriage and about life after death. And then they came with the final toughest kind of, not toughest, but probing question to go, what's most important? And they said, what's the greatest commandment? And they were still kind of in this testing mode, although the guy that actually comes to ask Him that question is actually really wanting to know. And so the answer Jesus gives is this. He says, the greatest commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. That's the greatest commandment. Now, the guy only asked what the greatest was. He didn't ask what the second was. Jesus throws in the second as a bonus answer, right? But it's interesting, and you've got to think about why. And one of the reasons I wonder is that as Jesus says, love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, the person goes, oh, yeah, I know how to do that. I'll go to the temple and do that. I'll obey the law and do that. I'll do strictly what it says, and that's my loving God. And it's interesting that Jesus says, actually, by the way, just in case you think you're off the hook because that sort of mystical thing of loving God out there, you just tick off a few boxes here, I want to tell you what loving God looks like. Because the second command, and what is the words He uses here, is like it. You notice that? Those little words? It's the same as. That there's a second command that as you should love God, actually, I'll tell you what that looks like. It looks like loving your neighbor. Now, I find that interesting because sometimes you'd want to do the reverse, wouldn't you? You go, oh, I need to really love my neighbor. What does that look like? Oh, loving God. Hey, like the loving God is more abstract, isn't it? The loving your neighbor is more practical and real. And it's almost like Jesus is going, actually, loving God is practical and real, just like loving your neighbor, but loving your neighbor isn't so easy. But it's the same kind of love. The love that I need to have for God is actually the same kind of love. And if I come to this definition in 1 Corinthians 13, goes, love is patient, love is kind, that's the kind of love. Which is interesting when you start to think about it, because have you thought about this, that loving God is patient? Honestly, like when you think about love as patient, you think about people, right? Because that's who we get impatient with. Anyone ever impatient with God? Yeah. Love is patient. If I love God, it'll be like loving my neighbor, which is like being patient with them, which is how I should love God. So there's a lot to learn here as we think about this ever-widening circle based on love. Last year, I also introduced this definition. When my thoughts, feelings, and actions come together for the good of another, love is expressed. I just want you to think about that for a moment. Before we start to think about patience, is what does it mean to actually love? I love the story of the Good Samaritan. And that's carrying on this theme because, you know, not only did Jesus say, love the Lord your God is the greatest command, the second is like it, love your neighbour as yourself. In another setting when that conversation was being had again, somebody says to him, but who is my neighbour? Wanting to justify themselves, really wanting to go, so is my neighbour just my fellow Jew who lives next door who I need to show kindness to? And Jesus just expands the circle massively. And what I love is that he actually talks about thoughts, feelings, and actions in the story that he uses. Most of you are familiar with the story of the Good Samaritan. If you're not, have a read of it this week in Luke 15. But what I find fascinating in the story is Jesus explains who a neighbor is and what loving them looks like. Is that in the story, there's this guy who's traveling, and it doesn't tell us who he is. And it doesn't tell us what nationality he is, even though the story is racially charged. And what's interesting is that as this Samaritan, who's kind of like the foreign guy who the local people listening to the story of Jesus would have instantly hated, even though they didn't know him, he becomes the hero of the story because he's wandering along and he sees a man who's been robbed and beaten up and left for dead. And it's interesting in the story that the Samaritan, the first thing about him is his thinking. He sees a man. It doesn't tell us what race the man is, what nationality is. He just sees a man. It's really clear thinking. It's clever storytelling by Jesus. But the Samaritan in the story sees a man. The next thing is he sees the man who's dying and he has compassion on him. He has this deep emotional feeling towards him. Despite or regardless of whatever the race of the man is. See, the thinking and the emotions are coming together for the good of the man. And the actions that follow in the Samaritan story are amazing, aren't they? That he comes across the road, makes himself vulnerable, gives up his ride, the donkey, for this guy, wraps him up, takes him to a place, is inconvenienced at high cost and possibly social judgment, and cares for the man because the man is in need. And you see this whole thing of thoughts, feelings, and actions come together. And Jesus says, see that? That's your neighbor. And that's loving your neighbor. And then he says this to the crowd who are listening. You go do the same. You go do exactly the same. This is what love looks like. So let's go back to our 1 Corinthians 13. And you don't have to go there because we've really only got a couple of words there. But it says again, love is patient. Verse 4. Just before that, as Paul introduces this most excellent way of love, as he's talking to this church at Corinth and saying, you guys need to learn this kind of love. As he begins with the first three verses, telling them something that would have been hard for them to hear, because they were people that were concerned about their own position, their own skills and abilities, their own well-being. Doing things right. And as he's starting to tell them how they should do things in life, he brings in this idea of love and he brings it in such a way to say, you know what, if you get everything else right in being the church, if you get everything else right in being a follower of Jesus, but you lack this one critical piece, which is love, then it's all a waste of time. And the things he has in verse 1 to 3 are really interesting because they're pretty specific things that you might have or do. And this is my paraphrase of the first three verses. If I am deeply spiritual, extremely gifted, ridiculously generous, and radically disciplined, but I don't love God and people, all I do is empty and worthless. Do you get that? The very things that would define us most of the time as being, you know, a good church or a good Christian or even like a really good one, been deeply spiritual, extremely gifted, ridiculously generous, radically disciplined. Wouldn't that be great? Imagine a church full of people like that. And Paul would say, but if we don't love, then it's just like this annoying bell going dong, 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 dong. That's what he says. And then he says love is patience. You see, patience is an expression of love. And love is patient. In every situation I find myself, whatever circle I find myself in, this ever-widening circle of relationships, whether it's with my wife Lorraine, with my sons, with my actual neighbour, or with my metaphorical neighbour, because that could be anybody that life connects me to, whether it's with my brothers and sisters in the family we call church, or my brothers and sisters in the family we call humanity, whether it's community here or community there, I'm called to be patient because love is patient. So what is patience? Well, it's easier to define as impatience, isn't it? Like to define the impatience, because that's what we can find pretty easy. Impatience, I would say, is our negative reactions. It's our outbursts of anger, our frustrations, our criticisms, our judgments, our grudges. It's seeking to control relationships and the outcomes in a negative way. Impatience produces things like manipulation, controlling behavior, producing guilt in another. So to begin to understand what patience is, I think we have to get back to this inner circle of what God's love for us is like. Like I said earlier, God is love. Love is patient. So therefore, God is patient and God is patient with me. So just have a look in your Bibles at Exodus 34, verse 6. Have a look there. This is that time when Moses has come before God and the people of Israel have been just more than annoying. For weeks they've been complaining and disobedient, and then finally at Sinai it all goes horribly wrong, and they're just, as a whole nation, even though God has rescued them from 400 years of slavery, they have rebelled against God and turned their back against him. And the actions that follow are actually damaging to one another, very destructive. And so God is having this conversation with Moses, and Moses is appealing to God to show himself to Moses so Moses can better know God. And at one point, God shows Moses his glory. And in verse 6, it says this, and this is the Lord's glory expressed to Moses for the people. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger and abounding in love and faithfulness. So if you want to know what love is and that love is patient and what patience looks like, you go to God because he is love. And this is an amazing place to consider the patience of God. The words there is slow to anger, that God is slow to anger. God actually says that my glory, my best, one of the things that is my very best is my patience. If you're looking for the spectacular in God, you find it in his patience. Slow to anger. It's interesting, the word slow to anger, it's like two words put together. Arik af. And arik means long, and af means nostril. It doesn't mean you've got long nostrils, by the way. It could be like long nose, like Campbell means crooked nose. Maybe arik af means long nose, but that's not what it means. The word long is the word for time. It's a long length of time, okay? So it's saying of God, that part of his glory is that there's this long length of time before you'll see his nostrils. What do you think that means? Like this idea of your nostrils, your nose. Well, it's this thought that's there, that whole like snorting, flaring of the nostrils. It's about anger. It's one of the words in Hebrew that means to be angry, is to show one's nostrils. So what's it saying? It's saying long nostrils. It's going, wow. So one of the points of glory of God is it takes a long time before he will flare his nostrils at you, which is pretty amazing. That as people were so ungrateful for what God had done for them, so quick to turn from the promise that they'd just made a month before that they would follow him, and now they've gone back to the gods of Egypt. And now they're doing damaging things to one another. And God had every reason to go, I've had enough of you guys. And yet God in his glory says, oh, by the way, it takes me a long time before I'll flare my nose at you. A long time. That's patience. The patience of God. He is slow to anger. It takes a long time before he'll respond to us with an angry face. Love is patient. Flick across to the New Testament. Go to 2 Peter 3. It's interesting that Peter's talking about kind of like the end of the world stuff. And he's saying that there's going to be people coming and they're going, oh, your God, where is he? Said he was going to come and end things off in the world and bring justice and judgment and start this new forever. And he's never coming. Like, where the heck is he? You said Jesus was coming back. Man, it's been ages. I mean, and Peter was only writing a little bit afterwards. What's it like now when we read this? It's like people could go, wow, Jesus is a bit late, 2,000 years late. Like, it's taken a long time to get here. And look at all the stupid stuff people keep doing to each other still. Look at all the way that we're destroying the planet and destroying each other. Wouldn't it make sense that if there was a creator, he would have stepped in by now? That's the context of Peter's passage. It's going, it doesn't make sense that God hasn't stepped in. Because we are just destroying each other and destroying our planet. Surely he'd step in and fix it and start again. Why doesn't he? Look at 2 Peter 3 and 9. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, he is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. That's an amazing thought. He's going like, you know, he's not slow. No, you think of people as being slow to respond. Like, why don't you sort that kid out? You're just like, man, can't you see what they're doing around all the time? Why don't you just get stuck in there and sort them out? Why don't you sort that issue out in our society? Like city council or government or whoever, the authorities, why don't you just jump in and sort that out? We've been waiting at least 3 days for you to sort that issue. You know? And it's like, God, look at the mess here on your planet. Why are you so slow? And he goes, well, actually, the reason I'm slow is if I stepped in right now, it would be the end of life for a lot of people. It would be the end of life knowing me and my love. And I want as many as possible through the generations to be able to come into relationship with Jesus, to my love and to my family. And so you know what? Because of that, I'm patient with humanity. I'm just waiting. Incredible patience. Again, there's two words for this. This is in the Greek because it's the New Testament, and it's the word makros and thymos. And it's so similar to the Old Testament word. The makros this time is about distance, so it could be a long nose, you know. It's like it's about length, not so much length of time, but a long distance. But then thymos is about an outburst of passion. And the context here is talking about anger. So it's saying, you know what? It's almost as if God's got to be on the road for a long, long way before he'll erupt in anger against the destructive of this world. Because he loves us. See, love is patient, and God is patient, and God is patient with humanity because he wants as many as possible to come to know Jesus and to know his love and his forgiveness and come into his family. And he's not quick to have this outburst of passion. What I find interesting is that for you and I sometimes to have a short fuse, you know, we use that phrase, that's like, and to have an outburst, say, of anger is actually a really bad thing. If God was to have that, it wouldn't actually be a bad thing. Because he is completely good and just and holy. So if anybody has a good reason to be able to like shorten up the timeline of reaction, it's God because of who he is. of the perfection that's there. But in that comes love. And he goes, I will be patient. I will be slow to anger. It starts to help me to think about what impatience actually is when I think about God's patience. God's taking a long time and going a long way before he would have an angry outburst or face towards us. Because when I actually think about my impatience, most of the time it has to do with making judgment. It's certainly a reaction, but in that moment, it's making this judgment often. Often impatience is going, I am right, and this person, this idea, this circumstance is wrong. And therefore, what I do in this impatience often is I seek to control that. Or I seek to vent my feelings about how I feel about that that's inconvenienced me, that's cut across me. You see, you think about it with your kids, with your workmate, with your neighbor, is that the times that you are impatient with them is because they've just done something that you don't approve of, or that inconveniences you, or slows you down, or that shifts your circumstances, or challenges your ideas. And at that very point, you make judgment on that and you react accordingly. And probably a lot of times we're wrong. Even if we're right, even if I'm so annoyed with my neighbour and they have gone past the loud to be loud time and they've done it again after me doing the nice polite in my pyjamas asking them not to, even if I'm completely right, is it right to have a short fuse? When I have a God that has a long fuse who says, I want you to love your neighbour as I have loved you. And love is patient. So even if I'm right, I'm still called to patience. And here's the funny thing is, and most of the time, I'm not right. Not 100%. Because I don't know all the facts. I don't have all the details. Patience is not angry, controlling, manipulative, rash, vengeful, holding grudges, making judgment, withholding forgiveness, distancing oneself. In February this year, Lorraine and I were down in the South Island. We were travelling the West Coast. Oh yeah, we were down here, going to the Old Ghost Road and doing the West Coast. Picked this shirt before I realised it was a good match for today, by the way, but that's cool. We're driving down the road, and put your hand up here if your patience is most tested on the road. Yeah, see, I knew that. So, true for me too. My grandfather on my mum's side, I used to love on Friday nights staying at their place down in Fielding because Friday nights was fish and chip night. And so you get to go with granddad to the fish and chip shop. And my granddad was the most impatient driver, and as kids we loved it. We would sit with granddad in the car, go off to the fish and chip shop, and he would tell every driver off at every intersection. He was a really grumpy driver. And we just loved it. I think I got some of that. And so I'm driving in my van down the west coast with Lorraine, and you get off the ferry at Picton, and you go from Picton down towards Westport, and you go through this Buller Gorge thing. It's considered one of the most beautiful drives in the country. It's actually rated as that. Beautiful drive. Beautiful means windy, right? Normally, like that, okay? And windy means slow, okay? And I've always got somewhere to be. I don't know about you, but I always have somewhere to be, and I need to be there on time or early because there are things to do there, right? So I need to be at Lyle Camping Dock Camping Ground, and I need to be there in time to set up my tent, to set up my camp, to make myself a stovetop of my little gas cooker, not because I need another coffee, but it's just a fun process. And then before dark, I want to go and run in that West Coast ghost road for a bit just to check it out, and then I want to be able to come back. This is very important. And this road between Picton and Lyle is beautiful, and it's very slow, Okay, so we're driving this road, trying to soak in all the beauty. Now, what's interesting, just flick that up, is so there's these big signs you see down on the West Coast. They're actually generic kind of New Zealand signs, but I don't know why you see them in the West Coast. Like, I hadn't seen them before. And journeys may take longer than you think. Allow extra time. Yeah, New Zealand roads are different. And then there's another one here. Save overtaking for long, clear, straight roads. There weren't any. And there's no passing lanes. And I'm not sure of the brand of that car there, the little silver car there, but you know when it says New Zealand roads are different, it's a lie. And the West Coast roads, they're no different. They're just like driving around Coromandel or out to Raglan. That's all they're like. It's the drivers are different. So you get off at Picton and you join the queue, and I'll tell you what there is. There's large motorhomes. There's small camper vans like our Toyota Estima, but they've got the little sticker thing saying they can freedom camp or whatever. And then there's silver Nissan Titas. Did you know that? I didn't even know they were a car until I went to the West Coast. They're all silver and they're all little and they're slow. Like really slow. So it's like you finally get past that motorhome and you think, yeah, past the big sucker, and then you come up behind this little silver thing. And it doesn't sit hard left where there's enough room. It sits like middle line. That's ridiculous. And I've got to get to Lyle because I've got a tent to set up because we've got to make camp to be able to relax. And this is a beautiful gorge with no passing lanes. And you know what? It has a few slow lanes. You know those slow bays? Stupid drivers. They're foreign tourists who don't know how to drive on the left-hand side of the road. It's true. And they drive slow. And when there's a slow bay, they don't know what a slow bay is. Because they don't even know it's slow. They just stay in the middle. And those slow bays aren't long enough for you to try and get around the left. I've tried. You just can't. It's like, man, so frustrating. So eventually, every now and then, you do occasionally find that somebody pulls over for gas or something, or I don't know, to be car sick or something, and or you might just take a shot at it and you do get past because you didn't follow the sign properly. But what do? Love is patient, right? So you don't blast the horn at them, all right? You just ride up real hard on them. And just keep putting the indicator on and just hope they get it. And definitely when you do get that shot to pass them, you give them the eye. Like. And then you land at your dock camp. You know, we stayed at dock camps all the way down. You land at your dock camp and you know what happens? You get there 5 minutes earlier than all of them. And then they all start to come in behind you. And you're going to be happy campers together in the camping ground together for the evening. They're the people you're going to love and say, come on over for a stovetop at my campsite. Because love, we love them, don't we? But love is patient. It's so patient. And you go, oh, look, that's just silver Nissan Titas, you know. It's like end of the day, you know. And they were everywhere, by the way, all the way down. All the, oh, unbelievable. Anyway. We might not all go down the West Coast and all get, you know, impatient with Nissan Titas, but I just want to say, what's a Nissan Tita in your life? Yeah. Our kids are our silver Nissan Titas. They are. They slow us down. They're annoying. And you know what? And sometimes I think we're not that subtle with them. You know? You're slow. Why? Don't you care? Are you like, you don't care what goes on around here, do you? You're just going to hold us up every time. And then when we finally do get them in the car, we give them the look, don't we? Like, we give them the look. And yet later on, we expect that we can suddenly shift modes into campground mode in the lounge and have deep and meaningful with the same ones that we've got no time for. But love is patient. Do you see how patience sort of sets the scene for all the rest of the expressions of love? Like, who is your Nissan Teeter? Is it your neighbor? Maybe it's a neighbor who just is incompetent and unreliable and doesn't care. And like, we've agreed to build that fence between the two of us and to go halves. Well, I've agreed anyway, but they should have agreed because it's law and it's the way it works. And they won't reply my texts or my emails. They're inconsiderate. They're useless. But hey, Life Group's got this idea that we have like the street barbecue and we show the love of Jesus. And of course I'll invite my neighbor to that. But as we move off the street and back down the driveway and we notice the non-built fence, I'll give him the look on the way home maybe. You know, what does it look like? What does it look like to love with patience? Here's the crazy thing, going back to the Silver Nissan Teeter, sorry to do that, it's therapeutic for me to get it out. But is that as I'm driving my van, here's what's craziest. I don't know the drivers. Like maybe they're just like me in that they've gone to the West Coast to see the beauty of New Zealand and they're taking their time having a look. Maybe they're just like me. Because here's the crazy thing. Do you know what was crazy about that story? And I only realised this halfway through the trip, is that I was one of the motor camper van guys. I had my tent in the back, my little cooker in the back. I wasn't certified, so I had to stay at dock camps. But it was like, I was one of those guys. I was probably holding other people up. And the reason I was there was to see the beauty of the countryside, and I was on roads I wasn't familiar with, and the very people that I was impatient with were also there to see the beauty of the countryside, and they were also unfamiliar with it. And maybe they had a few other things that weren't going right for them either. Maybe they'd never driven on the left-hand side of the road. Maybe they'd never driven a motorhome that big before. It's crazy to think that I was so judging on them so quickly in the moment, instead of pausing to actually think straight and respond in love. But isn't that what we're like? And here's the kicker of the story, is that we got to the bottom of sort of the West Coast and we turn around to come back. Coming back's a breeze because most people head south and then get on a plane and fly out, right? So coming back, there's hardly any silver Nissan Teeters going your way. It's awesome. And there's this big, long, straight into Hokitika, and I've got no Nissan Teeters holding me up, but the guy in blue held me up. And I had to have a little chat to him and had to pay a few dollars. Made me sort of think it's not a bad thing having a Nissan Teeter slow you down sometimes, is it? Yeah. Love is patient. I've been the guy who needs others to be patient with me. I've been the guy holding other people up. I've been the guy who's been disagreeing. I've been the guy who hasn't been replying. And when I'm in those cases, I've even been the guy in a big motorhome once traveling around Italy holding traffic up because I was so freaked out driving on the wrong side, right side of the road, in a truck-like thing. I've been the one that needs others to be patient with me. If I actually pause and think about it, even that's enough for me to stop and not be so impatient with others. But when I think about my relationship with God and the central relationship of love, I know what it's like to be slow to respond to God's promptings. I know what it's like to refuse to follow his callings and commands. I know my slackness and lateness of keeping promises I've made to him. I know the way in which sometimes I avoid taking time to just be with him. And in all of this, what is my experience of God? He takes a long time and it's a long way before he would show his angry face to me. God is patient with me. And it's, you know what? I need God to be patient with me, and I need others to be patient with me. And I think that it just makes sense that if love is patient and I need that love so desperately, that I also need to be somebody who loves others in the same way. And you go, it's really hard though. I get really impatient with my kids. I'm impatient with my neighbor. I'm impatient with God over what's going on right now. How do I deal with that? And I've just got three things that you could, they're kind of like doing things, but they're really not. I guess they're just mindsets. And I just hope they might help. They're things that help me. I can say this, like, since the love is patient year, I am way more patient than 23 years ago. Can I tell you this? I'm not very patient still. But that just tells you what 23 years ago was like. We're all growing. We're all changing. God's love is transforming us. But it's a lifelong journey. But here's the three sort of mindsets, thoughts that I have. The first is this, to pause. Most expressions of impatience are about short, aren't they? They're about reactions. That's the very nature of the word, you know, this idea of slow to anger, long suffering. It's this idea that time is present when patience is present. So what does it mean to actually stop being such a reactive person? You know, like when your kid's growing up or people say, you need to count to 10. It's actually not a bad thing. It's probably quite a good prompt. When you feel the temperature rising, the tone in the voice is changing, it's actually time to pause. And it's kind of like you've got to pre-choose that, especially if you find it's a repeated thing. Maybe it's in a relationship. Maybe it's with your spouse or with a particular friend. And you find yourself always getting agitated and frustrated. What would it look like to pre-decide that, you know what, I know that's coming. I know that next time we have this conversation, I know where it's going to go already. I'm going to choose that next time that happens, I'm going to create some space. What might pause look like? It might look like the count to 10. It might look like removing yourself from the conversation or the room. It's just somewhere in there, you've got to buy yourself some time to be able to rethink. And if you don't do that, the tendency will be that the emotions will take over and you'll find yourself in judgment over the situation or the person and reacting in a way that is not loving. So I just suggest that predetermine that you're going to find ways to pause. To pause. I've put this, to choose to not react negatively. It's actually a choice that we make. I would say this, though. You say, well, where's love in that? It's just like you're just making this choice. You're making like a mental mechanism. Well, it is. Love is choosing, you know. Love is actually, because I value this person, or it might be because I long to value this person, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to choose this mechanism as one of the ways that I'm going to actually grow my love. The second one is this, to rethink. Be honest about them and myself. It's a bit like me with, you know, traveling down the West Coast. If I just stopped and thought about it, you know, it actually makes sense to be patient. If you just stop and think sometimes about circumstances or where this will lead, it's a rethinking. I think this part about being honest, though, is be honest about what you know about the other person. You know, I think I shared with you guys recently about, you know, I had this fallout with the neighbor thing. Well, I had it, they didn't. And all of it was going on in my head, and I didn't know their circumstance. And when I actually finally went, prompted by love, to actually ask the circumstance and found it out, I found out that my judgment was totally wrong. So sometimes we need to rethink, and we need to actually find out the truth. But not only finding out what is true about this other person, but what is true of myself. And I'm pretty sure on this one, and I speak to dads, say, because I'm a dad, it's like, dads, some of the stuff that annoys the heck out of you about your kids, that's you. That's what you're like. In different environments with different sets of relationships, you're just like that. Be honest about that. And think about how you want people to treat you in that and how God is patient with you in that. And then the last one is to love. It sort of seems obvious, but what does patience look like if it's a real action? What does being slow to anger look like? Does it look like forgiveness? Does it look like a trying to understand the other person? Does it look in some cases like compromise? Some cases we're going to talk about humility in a few weeks. Sometimes does it look like taking a humble space and fully giving over to the other person's idea or situation? What does that actually look like to respond in love? They're just a few things that I find helpful. Love is patient. God is love. God is patient. God is patient with me. And this way God expresses his love to me. And then out of that, he calls me wherever I find myself in this widening circle of relationships to express love in the same way. I mean, we're going to cover over the next few weeks a few other things, but this love is patient piece, I feel like it's foundational. It's almost like the fluid that all the rest of the loves flow from. It's disarming of the tensions that prohibit love, of the judgments that put us offside straight away. It helps us come maybe into some common space with another to then think about how we can show them kindness, be humble towards them, be consistent with our love towards them, some of the things we're going to look at. So I just want to encourage you right now, just pause, and this shouldn't be too difficult. Difficult as in easy to know, but difficult to do maybe. But where is impatience for you most found and present right now? Just think about that. It could be a space or a circumstance. Most cases it would be a relationship. But where do you find that a lack of patience is most present for you right now? And in lots of ways, trying harder there is not necessarily the right answer. But I think a good place to start is to just come with that and give that to God who is patient with you. And I just encourage you just in this moment just to take that relationship, that circumstance, and just ask that God would start to produce his fruit of love in you that is patient. So let's just do that just now. Just come with that thought, that person, that relationship, and give that to God right now. And then I'll pray for us. Father God, you know the relationships that we're just thinking about right now. You know the circumstances. And there's a part of us that wants to control that right now, wants to have it our way. But Lord God, we want to trust you with these relationships and these circumstances. And we just want to give them to you and say, we trust you, God. We trust you to lead us through them. Help us to be those who almost like have the self-control to give up the control. Just ask that that as we surrender to you these things, these people right now, that by your Spirit, you would be transforming us through your powerful work, that you'd be making us more like Jesus and producing this fruit of love in us. This fruit of patience. That we would be those who are just real slow to respond negatively. But that our thoughts and our feelings and our actions towards others would be for their good, not for our gain. That it might be said of us as a people that we are people that have been with Jesus because we look like him. That people would know we're your followers because of the love we show. Yeah, grant us patience this week, we pray in Jesus' name.